About 1 in 4, 25%, consider themselves Christians, different types. The second most populous religion is, guess what?
It's Islam.
Islam. About 15%. 15% of the world's population. And Islam is mainly the product of the inspiration and revelation to just one man, and that was Muhammad. So, his name. Curiously, most of the world religions I deal with were connected particularly with one particular man. I won't go into why there were no women, but if you want to continue with it, one of my students at Merrillhurst, who was a feminist, asked, how come they're all men and no women? Well, I said, well, I'll assign you the task as a term paper to deal with that. And actually, there was a period of the 10,000 years ago, about 7 or 8,000 BC to about 3,000 years ago, which was the Neolithic era, the agricultural era after the Old Stone Age, New Stone Age, when there were feminine religions of the goddess, and that seemed to go about 3,000 years ago. Maybe it's beginning to come back now with the recognition of Gaia and the sacredness of Mother Earth. The Native Americans never lost that tradition, or never lost that understanding at all, by the way. So let me set the mood a little bit, not just verbally, but with music. This is Islamic music from the Sufi or mystical tradition, and it's called Calling Out to Allah. If this tape recorder works, we'll listen to this for a little while. Calling out to Allah. Allah is the same one God of Jews and Christians, by the way. We'll get into that. Should have had it rewound. Thank you. Play a little, more of that later. Set the mood there. And I personally studied for about a year with a Sufi dervish that had a group in different parts of the country. Not from Baghdad, Iraq, came before it was bombed in the Gulf War, but named Adnan Muhammad al-Sarhan. And we'll say a little bit about the Sufis at the end. They're the a mystical branch of Allah. But the very most basic tenet teaching of Islam is the one God, whom they call Allah, and the basic creed of Islam is La ilaha illallah, La ilaha illallah, which is called the Shahada, and it simply is translated, there is no God but Allah. There is no God but Allah. And then they also believe Muhammad Rasulullah. Muhammad Rasulullah. And that means Muhammad is his prophet. But that doesn't mean they only believe in Muhammad as a prophet. In fact, Muslims believe, go back to Abraham as their first prophet, and he's really a common ancestor of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. And you recall from your study of the Bible that Abraham had besides Isaac, his child with Sarah, who came later. You remember, she was barren until about age 90. He was age 100. But before that, he had a child with his handmaiden, who was named Hagar. That child was Ishmael. And the Arabs trace their descent to the other child of Abraham, instead of Isaac, Ishmael. Ishmael. So, Muslims would believe that these following people were prophets of God, Abraham, Moses, Jesus, and Muhammad. They would deny that or disagree that you could call Jesus God incarnate or the Son of God, but they would consider him a prophet of God. In fact, in the very high regard in by Muhammad and the Muslim tradition, they call Muhammad Rasulullah messenger or a messenger of God. They refer to Jesus as Ru'Allah, or it's the Spirit of God. And I'm temporarily blanking out on the name of Moses. Maybe one of you know in Arabic. But it is translated, would be translated, the Law of God. Law of God. Muslims would consider any what they call association with Allah to be a sin, or they call that a shirk. So they would consider that Christians were committing a shirk by saying Jesus was God. Rather, they see him as a prophet of God. It is probably the most pure monotheism that exists The only thing necessary is to believe in that basic creed, to be a Muslim, where in general Judaism is, Jew is basically defined, I'm a Jew, as someone who was born of a Jewish mother. And then there's a process of conversion, but it's not proselytized or okay. So the Quran, which was something that came to Muhammad in Revelation, so through the intermediary of the Archangel Gabriel, is 114 chapters or surahs, and it's not in chronological order. It is arranged from the longest, which is about 30 pages, to the shortest, which is about three short lines. It's from longest to shortest. That's not how our Bible is arranged. We have a more chronological story, and why this is so, I have no idea why it's arranged from longest to shortest. But the Quran stresses that Muhammad was not a god, but a mortal man who died, and he was destined to be judged by his creator, as everyone else is. He, unlike Jesus, performed no miracles like healing the sick or raising the dead. The only miracle that he ascribed to himself, and Muslims would ascribe to him, is the receiving of the Quran, receiving the revelation. And it was interesting that he did, because he was considered to be illiterate. He didn't read or write, but he did receive that. And he couldn't at that time, if he could read or write, have read the Jewish or Christian scriptures, because they were not translated into Arabic at that time. This was, he was born about 570 AD and died in 632 AD. So at that time, the Old and New Testaments were not translated into Arabic, and he was illiterate in any event. But he received these revelations, and he spoke them, and there were others who were like scribes who were literate and wrote down what he said on parchment or whatever they wrote on in those days. And all of this took place, as far as the revelation of the Quran, over a period of about 20 years. And then after his death, it was all compiled into the holy book, the Quran. So, it came to him in the traditions, says, from the Archangel Gabriel, and that's a couple of figures in the Bible, our Judeo-Christian Bible, received revelation from the Archangel Gabriel too. Daniel was one, Prophet Daniel. And there was another one, who you must know, more well known.
Mary?
Yes. Yeah, Mary, Virgin Mary. So Gabriel is called the messenger of God. In general, there were four archangels, one of them fallen, Lucifer, Satan, and then three who were not, who were, and those were Gabriel, Michael, and Raphael. Anyway, Gabriel is always considered the messenger of God. And to change the subject slightly, I'm writing a book on dreaming called Religious Dreaming, and I read a book of a rabbi I spoke to once on the phone, who is looking at what the mystical branches of Judaism say about dreaming, and they say that big dreams, there are little dreams, ordinary dreams, and big dreams, and these dreams are via the Archangel Gabriel. And that sounds right, you know. Anyway, that would be a religious theory of dreaming. Going back to his Muhammad's life, and his name means highly praised. His name means highly praised. In the Islamic tradition, they don't like to have any representations of Muhammad, incidentally. Somewhat similar in Judaism. And there was a movie a few years ago, Muhammad the Prophet, and in order to not have too great protests from the Islamic community, they never showed Muhammad in the movie. You heard him, but you never saw him. And then in the there's a parallel to that in Judaism. The Passover comes in April around the time of Easter, commemorating the exodus of the Israelites from Egypt, which you all know from the Bible was kind of led by Moses. But in the Passover Seder, Moses is never mentioned, so you won't confuse Moses and God. So there's a kind of a parallel there. So anyway, he was born in the land which is present-day Saudi Arabia, which is a hot desert land, and he was born in the city of Mecca, which is the most holy city now for Muslims, and that was a his father was named Abdullah and his mother Amina, but she died in childbirth, and his father died about 6 years later, and he was transferred to his paternal or grandfather, and he died, and then his uncle Abu Talib raised him up, and he was always loyal in a way to Muhammad, and later when he became a prophet and was very persecuted, he used his family position to protect him, and the sort of dominant family group then were the Quraysh. They're called the Quraysh, and actually Muhammad was a member of that large family group, and they were the rich and powerful at the time, and they were very oppressive too. All the worst oppressions you can imagine happened there in Mecca and so in old Arabia. People had a work at extremely low or no wages. The Quraysh owned everything, and they had to pay them all the rent. It was a time of a great deal of violence and intertribal warfare. The time of banditry. It was a time of kill or be killed, and or rob or be robbed. It was a time of great anxiety, and it was also a time of a very primitive form of polytheism, which seems to be the predecessors in other religious histories of a monotheism, and whereas the ancient Greeks had 12 gods and goddesses in their polytheistic pantheon, Zeus, Hera, and so Apollo, and so forth. The ancient Arabians, well, going back to about 1,500 years ago, had 360 gods and goddesses in their polytheistic pantheon, and they were all represented by various stone images in something called the Kaaba. Kaaba, K-A-A-B-A is one actually how they spell it. And that's a kind of a big stone structure. I don't know the exact measurements, but you it's kind of painted black, and you see it in pilgrimages to Mecca, the Kaaba. And it was thought, at least Muhammad said, that it was originally built by Abraham to the worship of the one God. But then it got religious development declined, and it broke up into 360 gods and goddesses. And these were kind of tribal gods and goddesses representing various forces of nature and some various human emotions, gods of war, gods of love, rain, sun, god of fate, and so forth. And some demanded sacrifices, even human sacrifices. And they had a priesthood that made a lot of money charging admission to the various stone images. So it was a very kind of a perverse time, and it was called the age of Jahiliya. Jahiliya, J-A-H-I-L-Y-A, Jahiliya, or age of ignorance. The Islamic tradition calls it Jahiliya, or age of ignorance. Also was an age of savagery. I didn't fail to mention that it was also a time of infanticide, and particularly infant girls were killed. And women had no rights at all in those days, and so that was the situation that Muhammad was born into. It was also a time, this is the 600s AD, that Europe itself was declining from the Roman Empire into the Dark Ages with various barbarian invasions, but also that Christianity in Europe was spreading outward towards formerly pagan countries like England. Imagine England was once a pagan country, Germany, France, and the Scandinavian countries. So it was a time of primitive polytheism and idol worship. So, now there's some parallels between it and what Abraham left. Civilization of polytheism and paganism in Mesopotamia, and his call or his mission was to leave there, get thee from thy kindred's house, and go to the promised land of Canaan. But Muhammad's task was somewhat different, and let's see. So, besides the primitive conditions, also Mecca was a trading post, being in the, right in the middle of the Middle East, between the East and the West. It was a place of a lot of trade, so it didn't produce much of its own. It was a desert place, but it was a center of trading. And Muhammad seemed to attract the attention of a rich woman trader named Khadija, and she was 40 years old at the time, and Muhammad was 25, but apparently she was attracted by his intelligence, and he worked for her, his shrewdness in business and his good looks, supposed to be very good looking, and she proposed the marriage to him, and he accepted, and so he got to go on trading voyages all over the Middle East, and he did in those voyages meet Jews and Christians. There were Jewish and Christian communities around, but these did not affect the basic religious life of the Arabs at the time in Mecca and in Arabia. So anyway, they married, and their marriage was a happy one and produced six children, boys and girls, but only one survived into adulthood. Her name was Fatima, and the others died in infancy or in childhood. Muhammad at 25 to 40, not too much is known about him, what he did, but they except that he became a spiritual seeker and something of a mystic, and he used to go up. He used to go up into a caves up in a mountain called Mount Hira, H-I-R-A, Mount Hira, outside of Mecca, to get away from all the corruption of Mecca to a peaceful place to be alone. And he went up there for a period of about 15 years, where he basically prayed and meditated. And one day when he was up in the mountain and in the cave up in Mount Hira, he had a vision of the Archangel Gabriel, and Gabriel said, "Recite." And Muhammad asked the vision, "What should I recite?" And Gabriel in the vision answered, "Recite, your Lord is the most bountiful one who by the pen taught man what he did not know." And then he went outside of the cave, and no matter where he looked, he saw the vision of Gabriel. So, he was actually rather shaken up by this, and went home to his wife, Fatima, chilled and trembling. This was a religious experience, jumping up in history to the 20th century. The various psychologists, Freud, Jung, and so forth, Maslow, try to understand religious experience, and Maslow calls it a peak experience, something very happy and everything. Not necessarily very happy for him, it was kind of mind-shattering, and he didn't know whether he was crazy or not. And his wife, Khadija, assured him that he wasn't crazy, and wrapped him up in a blanket or cloak, and then while he was wrapped up, the Archangel Gabriel appeared again in his vision and said, "You are wrapped up in your cloak. Arise and give warning." And then he had a series of revelations of Gabriel over the next days and weeks, and he had a blind cousin, Waraga, who was rather illiterate and learned in scriptures of the
Judaism and Christianity, and he saw in his cousin the signs of a prophet. The signs of a prophet. His first convert, who do you think his first convert? Yes, his wife. Khadijah was his first prophet, but his uncle, humorous Abu Talib, he could never convert. That was the one who brought him up as from a little child, so he wasn't about to be converted by his nephew. And he made a few more converts, and actually not very many. After 3 years, he had only 30 converts, and mostly among the poor and disadvantaged class of people, not the power structure. And based on comments made by Jim Panther and Jerry Peterson, I've been looking into some books on liberation theology. And you could call Mohammed a liberation theologian of the kind of 1,500 years ago. So after 3 years, he had only 30 converts to Islam, and today there are probably about 1 billion Muslims, or about 1 out of every 5 people. And about 1 out of every 4 are Christians. Jews are very small numbers, about less than 0.5%. His message was simple. The simple message was that they must abandon their pagan idols and their immoral ways and repent before the one God who